Yeah, that's good. My reading time is less these days too, because I don't have the huge commute up to Tokyo as I used to have because of the coronavirus stuff. I have less time to read these days too, but I am trying to get stuff read. I think I told you I'm on a huge Kerouac fix these days. But the big book I got into of his, I don't know if you know of it, it's called Some of the Dharma, which is basically his notebooks that he wrote, when was it, like from 53 to 55, 56 maybe, 53 to 56. It's his notebooks on Buddhism, and they just turn into like all kinds of things, poetry and like haiku and letters and all. It's just like a It's the size of it. It's a massive book, you know. It's really dense, and it's has all kinds of like just the like as a format of the book, like we were talking about that before. It's like each page has a different format to it, and he sends it away to Allen Ginsberg, and then he eventually gets it published. But it really gets into his Buddhism, his deep commitment at that time to Buddhism. Like he just immersed himself into Buddhism, and then it sets out his whole vision of what he saw his literature as being, which is kind of this Proust.
Interesting.
It what, say it again.
Oh, I said interesting because, like, the last Kerouac I did was Big Sur, and it feels like that book, I don't know if you've read that one,
Yeah.
he's really coming apart at that point in time,
Yeah,
and it might
he's
be
having
his.
DTs and everything else.
Right. And I think that made him question everything that he believed up to that point.
Yeah, at that time
I
his Buddhism was disintegrating as well. Like it,
yeah.
he eventually he gets back into his old original Catholicism. But no, I was just going to say, like his vision for his works, though, like his Legend of Dulowitz, you know, which is people think of that as containing all of his novels or almost all of his novels, you know, and it's basically autobiographical. But in Some of the Dharma, he explains what he meant it as, at least at that point, is a sort of Proustian mega novel, all put together, all stitched together of all his, what, 13 novels, but also including all of his poetry and then his prose writings, including this one, Some of the Dharma. And really, it's this kind of Proustian epic of a writer who is a bodhisattva, you know, an American bodhisattva, like a new Buddha of writing for his time. And that's what he's exploring in all his writing. Like, just this massive concept. And of course he's deeply inspired by the Wake too, towards that time. Like he wrote this whole published this whole book of poetry, kind of prose poetry called Old Angel Midnight, and it's his spontaneous bop prosody version of Finnegan's Wake, which just he just throws everything together all at once. That's a great book to read if you get a chance to find it somewhere.
The reason why I like him so much is because in a lot of his awake and like his writings, he's in and around places that I've been in and around too. So like Desolation Angels, he is a fire lookout really not far from where we had our first sink cabin.
Oh, really?
Where we
Oh, wow. Wow, I didn't realize it was there.
in the Cascades, but then my dad lives not far from, I think it must be in the Dharmabums, where they're doing a lot of hiking in and around, it's California, it's not far from San Francisco, but it's up in the Sierras, like,
yeah, it's by Muir's Wood.
Yeah, well, not far from Yosemite Park, basically.
Yeah.
There's a town that they go to and stuff, and so, but my dad lives right around there, too, and so, like, that was the comment about, like, when these guys are writing about the Midwest, they don't have any connection to that, but when you have a writer writing about the actual landscape that you inhabit, so, like, I was telling you about this Nez Perce War book, where they're, you know, it's like, this is all the places that, like, where I grew up, and so, you know, to have history happening where you've been makes it all the more real or like meaningful for some reason.
Yeah. Well, for me, it's really meaningful too, because like I read On the Road in high school, which I guess a lot of people probably did too, but that book inspired me to just, as soon as I could, just get out on the road and start hitchhiking. And I went back and forth, Canada and the U.S. and down to Mexico and Central America. Like, and that was all kind of inspired by Kerouac eventually. But
I had read a lot more of him than I have. It's not very many, it's like four.
Yeah, I'm just reading Satori in Paris right now, which is one of, I think, his last, second last little book. It's a tiny little book. It would, if you wanted to read it all in one stretch, it would just take you like a day or less than a day. But by this time, he's completely alcoholic. He's like 43 years old, and he's old for his age even. And he's just stumbling drunk through the streets of Paris and Bray and, and trying to trace down his ancestry. But it's still good.
But now, were you saying that they made the book, like his vision of stitching together all his novels and all his poetry and everything?
No, that's just his vision of it. And I've only read about it in some of the Dharma. Like, everybody knows about the legend of Dulowitz, and that he had this idea that all of his novels, like about 13 novels, are all intended to be one big legend, you know, of this one guy, Jack Dulowitz, which is Kerouac, right? But in some of the Dharma, he explains that it actually, his vision of it goes way beyond just that. You know, it includes all of his poetry and his prose writing and his writing on the Dharma and Buddhist Dharma. And yeah.
The books don't cohere. I mean, they do. So it's like he removes reality one step and renames all the people in his life something different.
Yeah, he had to. Like, his intention was to keep the original names, but his publishers wouldn't allow that.
The names, even though, do they, so like, what is his muse? What is that guy's name? Can't I think of his name?
Neil Cassidy or... Moriarty, Dean Moriarty.
I was gonna say David Cassidy. I was like, what? No, but like these same characters, they don't have the same name in the different books, do they?
No, like he gets called, like Neil Cassidy gets called something different in Dharma Bums and his other. And in Subterraneans, I just finished that one. He's called something different too. Like, yeah, on the road, he's Dean Moriarty. And that book focuses on him, you know. But then he wrote a book that I haven't read. I think it's called, what is it? Visions of Neil? I don't know if it's called Visions of Neil. No, it's not Visions of.
Is it Visions of Cody?
Yeah, Cody, I think it is. Yeah, I think that's about him too. Yeah, Visions of Cody. So that's kind of like a it's supposed to be a really good one. Like it's kind of like the more avant-garde version of On the Road. But
So, here's another quick little. Did you know that Celine also became a fascist?
he's 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 another one of those guys. So that yeah, I think that's
So,
why Gas is that's one of his inner texts, you know. Because
what do you make of that? And then how do you make that make sense with what happened with the alt-right? Is that what you're considering, or have you thought about that?
oh yeah. So that's a deep question. You know, the same thing happened with Pound and a bunch of different people, like even Yeats and Eliot and Wyndham Lewis. That whole group of vorticists or English modernists all went heavily to the right. But there's all kinds of people, like even Carl Jung and Eliade and all of these people that kind of async people are into all veer towards that direction. Even Joseph Campbell,
I
you know.
think, yeah, he was accused of anti-Semitism
Yeah,
at
well,
least once.
you read his stuff, and it's he definitely doesn't like Judeo-Christianity, and especially the Judeo part of it. Yeah, that's a huge question, right? Like, why does that happen? Like, in some ways, the right is a lot more receptive of just a sort of spiritual or non-materialist view of things that the left, because it almost entirely followed Marx, kind of outlawed, you know, as being bourgeois and as being reactionary, etc., right? Where the original manifestation of the left was a lot more inclusive of that kind of spiritual element to things. Yeah, I guess that's another subtext of my whole thing is just trying to reintroduce that, you know, a kind of spiritual vision of the left. But to get that, you almost have to go through these kind of right-wing lunatics and try to ransack their writings for the good nuggets as well. Like another guy is.
Well, do you have an?
Go ahead.
I was gonna say, it sounds like we're in for quite a ride as far as this next book.
Of what?
The
Oh, the Celine.
Celine. It just,
Yeah.
yeah. Like he might be just as Haiti as, or you know. Is that a word?
Well, it is now.
Displeasure. Like he also has displeasure with the world as much as Kohler.
Yeah, definitely. I think he's more interesting, the character in the book. He travels a lot. He's not like just this grumpy old professor in his
Yeah.
house. You know, like he goes all over the place. If that's actually, I don't know if the character in the novel is actually Celine, but it probably is.
I think it is. I think, and like you were you saying that he influenced Kerouac?
Yeah, he was a huge influence on Kerouac through Burroughs. So Burroughs turned Kerouac onto Celine. But again, Kerouac is another one of, like last time we were talking and you were saying that Ulysses is sort of the yes and the tunnel is sort of the no. Kerouac is the yes as well. Like he emphasizes that point to his writing. But I think Celine is very much the no. Another guy who went that way, who I haven't read but keeps getting recommended to me, is Knut Hamsun. Do you know that guy? He's a German writer.
No.
His big book, or his, I guess his most famous book, is called The Hunger. It's just called Hunger. And he's another one of these guys who is like he's on the edge. I think he hung out with Hermann Hesse. But he went that same kind of right wing. I don't know if he became a Nazi or like but he went that way as well. So I think all that stuff is fascinating. It's like exactly what you said, is like trying to figure out what happened in those days and then compare that to what's happening now or what might happen now. And maybe using it as trying to prevent what could happen now.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because it was less of a, I mean, I don't know. There was a part of the culture that definitely got sucked into that, but it's not like it was from an artistic standpoint, there wasn't, it doesn't seem like, but that's what's so weird about now too, though. It's like, it's not like there are any poets that are the voices of the age so much.
Yeah, unless you include 60s. Yeah, unless you include stuff like hip-hop or something like that, or like, I don't know.
Musicians, definitely. In the 60s it was music, but there were actual poets in the 60s too, you know, that were well-known and sold their work and stuff like that. But I was saying how reality is like such a drug, or it's just so encompassing, we don't have much room for the imagination. You know, maybe it is pundits that, you know, like we don't have poetry anymore, we just have punditry, and they're the ones who embrace the fascism.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like in that introduction you read, I'm trying to make the point that there are those poets out there. Like I have a good friend in London, who Luke Davis, who's an excellent, amazing poet, but he's like he's not connected to any university or anything else. He's totally independent, and he does his work typing just spontaneous poetry on the street, you know, and poetry that he just types off of a manual typewriter and gives it to the person who requests it, and they read it and often break out into tears. You know, like he's just that good. Like he's got the process down, you know, like he's and then he writes poetry for himself, or is more I guess, I don't know if I should call it serious, but more personal poetry. But I think people like that exist. Not too many, you know, but outside of the circles of the university and the entertainment industry, they do still exist.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we still have poet laureates, and they are good.
Even those people, like, I don't know, I don't want to put them down, because I think there are good poets among them as well, but it's like, the system tends to incorporate everything, right? So that whole institution of a poet laureate, it's almost like taming the poet, you know? like writers... writers in residence in the local libraries and stuff. Like, I'm not, I don't want to put down any of their books. I'm sure they're good books.
You know what it is? I would say the life of the mind used to be more robust. And so, like, people could make a living just writing short stories, because people read short stories. There was less there was just more written culture, I think, that was consumed. There was just more commerce in that. Whereas now, like, there's so much television, and I don't watch very much television, but I just realize that when I glimpse how much television there really is and how much mm-hmm. television normal people really watch, like, it's kind of shocking to me to just the amount of television that's out there. But
yeah, I don't.
There's so much money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so maybe that's where the poetry is, but I maybe to some extent, but if you like, television involves in movies and everything else, it involves such a huge production that you wonder how much of the poetic juice stays in there, you know?
Like, I'm just saying that they sucked all the
juice out,
the life out of the juice, yeah. And so there's mm-hmm. still poets, but slice of pie that now goes to poetry or short stories, or everything is so much smaller. And it's probably way harder to be like a poet these days.
Yeah, and I think poets have become, because of that, maybe that's a reason, or one of the reasons is that poets have become more timid, you know? If you get into the original roots of poetry, like the I don't know how to pronounce this, the Olaves of Ireland, and it's like, these guys have, they're like the bards, they have ultimate power, you know? If they write a satire about you, you're cursed, your life is cursed. They, you know, they, it's like Orpheus, you know? Orpheus made the rocks and trees cry, you know? You know, that's the power of poetry, to make the gods come alive again. And I just don't think many people take that seriously, you know? But unless...
Well, it's funny, because I was thinking... So I subscribed to Harper's Magazine for years, and I've gotten kind of tired of it. It's like, I should just cancel this and resubscribe to Poetry Magazine.
Mm.
I used to get that, and it's just like a, you know, lots of different kinds of poems and lots of different poets. And
yeah, I'm sure there's great stuff out there.
Compared to what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. Like a poem like Howl by Ginsberg, you know, and I know... Yeah, other poets aren't much into Ginsberg, maybe, or whatever, but at least that was, and that's in the 50s, early 50s, right? Or mid 50s, I guess. But at least that's an attempt to get back to that original howl, you know, like that original power that words have and should have. I think that's an honest attempt to get back to that, but I don't know how much of that, like even Ginsberg, I don't know how far he went with that. Like his background is also in Marxism, so he still has that kind of materialist worldview in the back of his mind, you know. Whereas earlier poets, it's like, I think they saw glimpses of the world of the gods, you know, like this sort of howling nature where spirits are everywhere, and like nature fully animated. But does that? Hopefully, I don't know. Maybe that comes back, you know. Maybe that's the next step. I was just talking to Wally about that the other day, and we're talking about the idea that maybe physics comes to the point where the symbol set to describe reality, so-called, or physical reality, the mathematics become fuzzier and fuzzier necessarily, because it's just realized that reality is more and more contradictory, you know. And what's fuzzier than actual language, actual conversational language, and then poetic language, right? And so if they get deeper and deeper into that, then maybe the poets become king again, you know? Like they will be the ones who, they'll be the main physicists. They're the ones who are describing reality most accurately.